broadcasting on the internet and at 90.1 FM from high atop Burnaby Mountain. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM.
I'm Jesse Brown, and today we're talking about the moment before AI was so hyped, back when it was still considered kind of a joke.
Artificial intelligence was considered the realm of lunatics and wackos and, like, eccentrics. So they couldn't get hired at really elite universities in the United States. So the University of Toronto hired them, and then it turned out they were really right and all the elite people were really wrong.
Wait for that.
Now, it seems we're at the dawn of a new age, the age of AI, artificial intelligence.
I believe that all jobs in every industry, in every workplace, are going to be touched and affected by AI. AI will touch, augment, fully replace, and even make redundant billions of jobs.
Is AI coming for your job? Let's ask it. I'm a video journalist for CBC Montreal. Will AI take my job? So here, ChatGPT says that AI can be used.
Okay, are we done with all of that yet? We, the media, we did our thing. We did the thing we always do with technology. We inflated it. We pumped it up. We blew it up like a balloon. Artificial intelligence, it's here. It's big. It's the best thing ever. It's going to do all of your boring, annoying shit for you. But it's also going to take your job and then take command of nuclear weapons and destroy humanity. All we can say for sure is that it's going to change everything right about now. And then it didn't. And nothing really has changed. So I know what comes next. After we inflate the balloon, after we blow it full of hot air, when it fails to immediately take off and fulfill every outsized and overhyped expectation that we ourselves created for it, now is the time when we pop our balloon, our own balloon. The one that we ourselves overinflated. We did it with virtual reality and with self-driving cars and with the blockchain. We hype a new tech and then we mock a new tech. So can we just move on to the mockery part now? I'm thinking headlines like, is AI dead? Was AI just a fad? How artificial intelligence made us organically stupid. We could find some once flashy AI startup that's now going under and use that as a news hook. I am used to these narratives. I have participated in some of these narratives. I'm ready to pop the balloon. Except that I am now so old that I actually know that there's a third chapter to this formula. After the balloon lies deflated and discarded yesterday's news, and the media's attention is directed elsewhere, that deflated balloon moves. It wiggles. It comes back to life. It inflates all by itself. But it's not a big round balloon. It takes a different shape than what we were expecting. It's a poodle or a giraffe. Let me drop the balloon analogy. What am I talking about? QR codes, wearable computers, the electric car. Each of them was at one time written off as a flop and relegated to the tech fail graveyard, and then went on to become a regular part of everyday technology. AI was a game changer, then a menace, then a novelty. I fully expect it to soon morph into a punchline. But then what? Listen, the first thing that I have read about artificial intelligence that actually got through to me and made me think that, yes, this may actually be something incredibly significant. Well, that piece was a piece in The New Yorker by my friend Stephen Marsh, all about the accidental creation of linguistic artificial intelligence. Marsh has been fascinated with AI and has had the unique and rare opportunity to explore that fascination in conversation with his neighbor, Geoffrey Hinton, the godfather of AI, who just won the Nobel Prize By Marsh's own humble description, he called his recent piece in The New Yorker about AI probably the most important piece I'll ever write. And after reading it, I had the sense that that might be true. But I also have to admit, I did not really understand what I had just read. So I invited Stephen Marsh to come onto this show and explain it to me. Wait for it.
In the spring of 2017, in a room on the second floor of Google's building, 1965, a college intern named Aiden Gomez stretched out, exhausted. It was 3 a.m, and Gomez and Ashish Vaswani, a scientist focused on natural language processing, were working on their team's contribution to the Neural Information Processing Systems Conference, the biggest annual meeting in the field of artificial intelligence. They had been pushing flat out for 12 weeks, sometimes sleeping in the office, on couches, by a curtain that had a neuron-like pattern. They were nearing the finish line, but Gomez didn't have the energy to go out to the bar and celebrate. He couldn't have, even if he wanted to. He was only 20, too young to drink in the United States. "This is going to be a huge deal," Vaswani said. "It's just machine translation," Gomez said, referring to the subfield of AI-driven translation software at which their paper was aimed. "Isn't this just what research is?" "No, this is bigger," Vaswani replied. The work the team was pursuing involved a novel kind of neural network architecture that they called the transformer. Their paper showed how the technology could be used to advance the state of the art in automated translation. But Vaswani seemed to have something else in mind. 2 weeks later, Gomez had returned to school at the University of Toronto when he received an email from Ukash Kaiser, his supervisor on the team, with the subject, generated Wikipedia articles. Kaiser explained that the team had used their transformer-based AI model to read Wikipedia, giving the system 2 days to analyze a little less than half of its entries. They then asked it to create 5 Wikipedia articles for the transformer. The system had responded with fictitious text that was shockingly credible. It described the Transformer, a Japanese hardcore punk band formed in 1968. The Transformer, a science fiction novel by a fictional writer named Herman Muirhead. The Transformer, a video game developed by the real game company Konami. The Transformer, a 2013 Australian sitcom. None of these Transformers existed, yet the AI had written about them authoritatively. Gomez's first thought was, how the f***? The generated Wikipedia entries were filled with inconsistencies, but they were also strikingly detailed. The entry for the punk band offered a lengthy history. Quote, "In 2006, the band split up and the remaining members reformed under the name Star Mirror," end quote. Where had these details come from? How did the system decide what to write? And why was a neural network designed for translating text capable of writing imaginative prose from scratch? "I was shocked, blown away," Gomez recalled. "I thought we would get something like this in 20 years, 25 years, and then it just showed up." The entries were kind of magic, and it was unclear how the magic was performed.
Hey, Stephen.
Hey, Jesse, how you doing?
So, Stephen, we just heard the opening of your recent piece in The New Yorker, and you have said that this was the most important piece that you've ever written.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You've written a bunch of books. You've written novels. You've written a bunch of nonfiction books. Why is this short piece in The New Yorker about AI the most important piece you'll ever write?
Well, you know, it was an essay where I interviewed everybody who was involved in the creation of the Transformer. It's the T in ChatGPT, Transformer.
Can I admit, for all of the overwhelming attention that ChatGPT and AI have received in the past year,
yeah,
when I read in your piece that T stood for Transformer, I was like, I don't think I knew that.
No, I think the actual details of how this stuff works just gets completely obliterated in these ridiculous debates about the end of the world and everything like that. The actual mechanics of this is what I wanted to talk about in the piece. This piece does have the very first hallucinations of a artificial intelligence, right? Like the very first time they put in Wikipedia and said, what is a transformer to a transformer? And it came up with answers that were not true, but made perfect sense. So like when I say it's the most important, like I think that's actually kind of a landmark for humanity, that moment. Like I think that's actually one of the most important technological leaps that we've lived through.
I'm not sure I understand that, and I think that's why I want to talk to you to get a better understanding of it.
Yeah.
I mean, you call this the Manhattan Project of our era.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how getting a computer to lie to us and make up some bullshit is akin to like splitting the atom.
You have computational meaning. You have computers that are able to be meaningful. That's so radical and so profound that it totally changes our entire relationship to language itself. I mean, the philosophical questions that come out of it are just immense. I mean, I actually think, you know, people talk about this is going to change industries and stuff like that. I actually don't know if any of that's true.
Uh-huh.
But what it means about language, what it means about what language is and what intelligence is.
What is thought, what is understanding.
What is understanding.
That's the kind of stuff we're talking about here.
Yeah, I mean, you have a machine that understands, but it's in a completely separate way that we understand anything.
And it happens to be kind of not that far off a place in time because we're talking about like the University of Toronto,
yeah.
Like 7 years ago.
Oh, this is the only story in my lifetime that I've actually known about it before it happened. And the reason is that it happened in my neighborhood. You know, Hinton lives like 3 blocks over from me.
Jeff Hinton, who just last week won the Nobel Prize for his work on AI.
Jeff Hinton is a great genius and figured this out on shirt grants at the University of Toronto. But that was not the Transformer. In 2015, he was using vision, like artificial intelligence of vision, to recognize things, which was a huge leap forward. I do absolutely think Toronto is at the center of artificial intelligence.
Do you have any thoughts as to why that is? Is there anything connection here from like the like Marshall McLuhan's influence?
Or no. It was very simple. Artificial intelligence was considered the realm of lunatics and wackos and like basically eccentrics. So they couldn't get hired at really elite universities in the United States. So the University of Toronto hired them and gave them funding, and then it turned out they were really right and all the elite people were really wrong. I mean, that's the very short version of what happened.
I remember hearing in tech circles people talking about Toronto and Waterloo as like, this is an AI hub. AI is going to be big.
It is still an AI hub.
That was like a branding thing that I was aware of, like, I don't know, like before all this ChatGPT stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I think we're absolutely at the center of it in a way that we've never been for any other technology. I definitely feel like artificial intelligence definitely had its key moment here.
So you like to name check Toronto as the place where AI got its start. And certainly last week's Nobel Prize to Hinton seems to reflect that. That got the ball rolling, and that brings us to ChatGPT, and specifically to the Transformer.
The Transformer, the T in ChatGPT, sits at the core of what may be the most revolutionary technology of the 21st century. PricewaterhouseCoopers has estimated that AI could add $15.7 trillion to global GDP by the year 2030, a substantial share of it contributed by transformer-based applications. That figure only gestures towards some huge but unknown impact. Other consequences seem even more murkily vast. Some tech prophets propose apocalyptic scenarios that could almost be taken right from the movies. What's mainly certain right now is that linguistic AI is changing the relationship between human beings and language. In an age of machine-generated text, terms like writing, understanding, meaning, and thinking need to be reconsidered. AI that can create and comprehend language carries the shock of a category violation. It allows machines to do what we thought only people could do. To a great degree, the researchers at Google experienced that shock as much as anybody else. The period leading up to the creation of the Transformer was like an accidental Manhattan Project. Conversations with its inventors suggest that 7 years later, we remain uncertain about why it's as effective as it turned out to be.
Okay, so at least with the Manhattan Project, Oppenheimer and the rest of the scientific team, they could explain what they had done. They could explain what happened and why. You're telling me that this inflection point, supposedly, in human history, ChatGPT, in particular, the workings of the Transformer, this remains a mystery even to those who invented it.
The whole point of this piece is they don't know what it is, right? The people who invented it don't know why it's doing what it's doing. It's a black box. And that's why so much of the AI safety stuff is just so much rhetoric. Like, they talk about transparency. I mean, how are you going to put transparency in the unfathomable? To me, it's like treating it like they're building something. They're trying to reckon with the power of something that they've conjured.
Right.
But that's not the same thing as, like, I have an outline of what I'm trying to build, and I'm going to make it. I mean, they're trying to build a generalizable intelligence. This is not like building a barn.
It's much more like building Frankenstein's monster. Like, it looks sort of like a person, and it's moving around, and it's wearing a sports coat. We don't know where it's going or what it's going to do. It might hurt somebody.
If we're going to do fairy tales or science fiction, like, I don't think the Frankenstein's monster is apt. I mean, to me, what it's closer to like is like one of those Star Trek episodes where they see an alien and they have to decide whether to blow it out of the sky or try and figure out what it is. And to me, it's like with artificial intelligence, I think like, well, let's have a look at this. Let's try and figure out what this is before we blow it up.
Okay, so what is it? Because it's not what they thought it was going to be. Like, what were they trying to build?
Up until that point, people were largely building artificial intelligence to do tasks, right? Like, to do, like, vision or translation or whatever. This was a generalizable intelligence machine, right? It was capable of doing translation, but it was also capable of doing sentence parsing. And then, 2 weeks later, they're like, what happens if we ask it to compose a Wikipedia entry about itself? And it does. And then it becomes, this can actually do, like, plan your trip to the southwestern United States. Oh, and also it can, like, write a Shakespeare sonnet. And it's also the basis for, like, the great image artificial intelligence pieces, right? So, like, what you have is, first of all, language is obviously the most powerful vision of abstraction. And then also, this is a machine that's capable of dealing in that abstraction in multiple ways. That's the key. That's what's so different about it.
I'm not sure I understand any of this.
A machine translation work is capable of doing one task, right? What if it can do any task? That's a generalized intelligence, and that's what's different. That's why this is like meeting an alien. That's why this is like a very profound moment for our species.
Here are two things that are coming close to making sense to me. One is that when I think about major scientific innovations and breakthroughs in the past, it seemed like it was humans understanding objective truths, cracking objective realities about the world through numbers. Breaking down the way things work through physics, coming up with formulas that help us understand matter, the universe, you know, arriving at something real and practical and replicable by translating it into numbers. Meanwhile, writers have long said that the reason why language is so important is that to understand language is to understand thought. The relevance of this is that AI is not an attempt to understand and decode the objective universe.
Correct.
AI is an attempt to understand, quantify, and replicate us.
No, I wouldn't.
Human thought.
Well,
it's artificial intelligence. We're trying to make machines that understand us, and we are more understandable through language than through numbers.
See, I think that's actually...
No? I'm off?
I wouldn't say... Well, I mean, the problem is that no one really knows. Right? I mean, part of this piece is that you're talking to, like, Jacob Uskite or Noam Shazier, who, like, are there. They're the inventors of this, and they're geniuses, right? They're extremely, extremely brilliant people. And you ask them, like, how much do we understand about artificial intelligence? And they say it's alchemy. It's like chemistry in the 12th century. Like, I asked Nikki Palmer, like, what percent do you think we understand of artificial intelligence, of any artificial intelligence? And she said, how much do we understand of a person?
Somebody asked AI to, like, write some Nick Cave lyrics.
Yeah.
You know, and it was like, I am the sinner, I am the saint. And then they asked Nick Cave what he thought about it. I want to read you what Nick Cave, he said, this is a grotesque mockery. This is a travesty. This is replication as travesty. It could perhaps in time create a song that is on the surface indistinguishable from an original, but it will always be a replication, a burlesque. Songs arise out of suffering, by which I mean they are predicated upon the complex internal human struggle of creation. And, well, as far as I know, algorithms don't feel things. Data doesn't suffer. ChatGPT has no inner being. It has been nowhere. It has endured nothing. It has not had the audacity to reach beyond its limitations. And hence, it doesn't have the capacity for a shared transcendent experience. It has no limitations from which to transcend. So it just is making fun of us.
No, but that's,
in a way.
I mean, one way to look at it, that it doesn't have any feelings. But another way to look at it is that it comes charged with literally the collective human feelings, right? Language contains so many hidden things, so many hidden suffering in it, right? Like, for example, in English, like if you're talking about a sheep that's in the field and it's mutton on the plate, sheep is Saxon and mutton is French, right? And that's the same for all animals. Beef on the plate, cow in the field. And that's because the Normans conquered England and the Saxons took care of, you know, they were an underclass who took care of things in the fields and the French people were eating it, right? So it actually, English contains this like record of the brutality of its history, right? In it, in these very secret ways, right?
Uh-huh.
In these caged ways. And AI to me is kind of the ultimate fulfillment of that secret truth in language, because what it has in it is like literally beyond our comprehension. But on the other hand, it's all there. It's just us, right? There's nothing else other than our language.
It's
that's
only
been
our comprehension.
Exactly.
It's right? Just about
that,
our comprehension.
And that's why, like, getting it to do Nick Cave is who needs more Nick Cave?
But
we
who,
have Nick Cave, right? Like, it can do that.
It feels to me like the limits of human imagination as to how we're comprehending this are that on the one hand, there's this fantasy of this is bad because if it can replicate us convincingly, it's only a matter of time before it reaches some sort of sentience, takes over our systems, and the robots are just basically running the world by talking to other robots.
But that's just the movies in
people's heads. Which I'm like, how did you get there?
I don't know. It's just the movies. I mean, the movies of artificial intelligence are like, guess what? It doesn't look anything like the movies.
So it doesn't look like that. Yeah. And then on the other side is the utopian, the tech utopian vision, like, oh, this is going to be great.
Yeah.
I'm just going to tell it, hey, can you plan my kid's birthday party? I want it to be under $500 and I want it to be really fun and I want it to be, and then it's just going to take care of all the arrangements for me. So is that where you fall on this? Is like, no, this is actually just something that makes life better. Is that where you fall?
To me, this is sort of like one of those things, like when we discovered that the Earth was not the center of the solar system, right? That we, like, our own smallness is a part of this. Like, I think that's part of the resistance of it. Like, we're not the only meaning-making things in the world anymore.
Because now there's a machine that makes meaning too?
But there's also there's sperm whales that make meaning. Like, I have a piece coming out in Canadian Geographic about people using artificial intelligence to try to talk to sperm whales, right? Because they have a language. They talk to each other. They go for these extended coffee clutches for like 6 hours a day, you know, and they have names and they have tribes and they have clans and all this stuff. But we don't really know what they mean. And the answer, the thing that's so fascinating is it's like, translating from whale is possible, except for the fact that a whale doesn't mean in the same way that we mean at all, because they are a different species. And all that we're doing now, like this blather that you and I are on, this is like very much an ape phenomenon. Our intelligence is maybe just one intelligence of many, and actually our intelligence is probably so terminally limited. One of the things that's really interesting is, like, you talk to these scientists about what their fear is about Transformer, right? like Jacob and Ashish and all these guys. And they don't bring up the end of the world. They don't bring up – they think it's going to end the scientific method, right? Because you won't – artificial intelligence can solve problems without understanding them, right? Without our understanding of them. Right. Like when it comes up with these medical solutions, it's not because it has, you know, established a theory, tested it, et cetera. It just has, you know, got to the ending, got to the answer, and all the medium steps we don't have. Right. So what they were anxious about is, will this end science? Will this turn scientific experiment into essentially like a humanities course, like something you might do because it might feel good, but not something that's necessary to actually make progress in technology?
Here's how my brain gets around this one is that I remember years ago, somebody like 20 years ago, a guy was explaining to me his stock trading with a black box and how a computer algorithm studying fluctuations in the stock market.
Yeah.
And trying to just crunch as much data as possible into historically things moving up, things moving down. This moving up by this iota tends to have a predictive, like, if that happens,
yep,
then 9 times out of 10, this thing will happen tomorrow.
Right.
And trying to get to a point where it can predict what's going to happen next. It doesn't know why.
No.
It doesn't care why.
It offers,
and neither did he, because he's operating in a system that, unlike something like A Beautiful Song or Medicine, all he gave a shit about was if he could know tiny little iterations of stock momentum up or down the day before, he could make money.
Exactly.
Right? And if we take that same philosophy, it's like, look, the machine doesn't know why this is a better cure for this particular kind of cancer or a better treatment for this or you know, taking it down to a genome level of targeting. At this point, it's so technical that I think what you're saying is that the traditional scientific method of having a hypothesis and finding a way to trial and error it and replicate it and having other people peer review it, well, when we get to such heavy data sets, you could actually feed this into AI and it can just look like, look, let me just make this easy for you.
Here's the answer.
And then all you have to do is test the conclusion. And you're like,
correct.
Oh, that actually worked better.
Yeah.
We don't know why.
And what gets lost in there is human understanding. Right. Like what is lost in there is there's no one who actually understands.
So now we're executing the results and we're administering that treatment and we don't.
There's not a single person on earth who knows why.
So now we've lost.
Yeah.
We've lost something there because you of course want to use the cure that works better. You're going to use it. But now it's like magic because now you don't understand how you got there.
What does it mean to live in a world where you can't know and nobody knows? Now, maybe we've always lived in that world. Maybe living in a technologically advanced world. Like, I don't know how a record player works, right? But I know that somebody does.
Yeah, if I really wanted to dig down on this,
I could probably wrap my head around it.
But there was a point in time when technology got so sufficiently advanced that we had to take on faith. Each thing I do, when I turn on the light switch, when I put on a record, relies on a body of science and knowledge and engineering that somebody understands.
But let me put it to you.
And now we're going to be living in a world where, no, actually nobody understands.
See, to me, what this, I mean, obviously I'm sounding very grandiose here, but this is a new spiritual state, right? This is actually the return of magic. Like, I literally think that's the correct term for what we're dealing with here is magic. But then also, you're dealing with a world where you know that your brain and your language is insufficient to grasp reality, and that is actually true of everyone. And similarly to the point where we realized that we were so alone in the universe and that the universe was so vast, it's a similar kind of humbling of our position as meaning creators, right? That we're like, actually our meaning is just grasping with our little terrible awkward fingers around things that we barely grasp, and now there's a machine that can just get there much faster. That's why I said it's literally magic, right? Like magic is the word we use for things that are hugely powerful, but we don't understand why. Like, we're in a world of magic.
A neural network that can write about Japanese punk bands must on some level understand that a punk band can break up and reform under a different name. Similarly, it must grasp the nuances of the idea of an Australian sitcom in order to make one up. But this is a different kind of understanding from the kind we know. The researchers behind the Transformer have different ways of reckoning with its capabilities. I think that even talking about understanding is something we are not prepared to do, Viswani told me. We have only started to define what it means to understand these models. Part of the problem is that there is no agreed-upon understanding of what understanding is. Is it a biological process or an abstract one, or both? Yuskuri takes a more philosophical view. Fundamentally, we have to accept that certain systems that are able to understand stuff, whatever that means, will almost by definition elude our understanding of them, he said. As we build these machines, we are bound to lose the ability to conceptualize what's going on. AI now is probably where chemistry was in the Middle Ages, Shazir said. There are these amazing things that work, and we can't yet predict why they work. We have some intuitions, and a lot of the development will be chasing those intuitions. In the past, scientists have often managed to turn their intuitions into clearly articulated explanations that can be proved or disproved. But it's unknown whether that will happen with AI. When asked Parmar how she would rate our current understanding of the models developed with the Transformer, she said, very low. I asked, how low? 10%? 1%? She shrugged. How do we understand other humans? We've never had a truly other language before, a new and alien form of discourse that understands in a way we can't understand.
That's your Canada Land. Listen, tomorrow, right here on our weekly politics edition, host Noor Azria looks at the election in BC. The new Conservative Party of BC is surging, and its leader is odd. Listen, you can email me about